Drunk on Comics presents a special edition podcast with Hacktivist.
Hey guys, Derek and Tony here with you again. And we have three very special guests here today. We've got Colin Kelly, Jackson Lansing, and Marcus Toe via the magic of the interwebs. How's it going, guys?
Great.
Really great. Thank you for having us.
Hey, fantastic. Our pleasure. Just so that our listeners at home can kind of figure out who's who, if you guys would go ahead and say your names for them so that they can kind of differentiate the voices.
Yeah, of course. I'm Jackson Lansing. This is Colin Kelly.
I'm Marcus Toe.
All right. So now, people that are not familiar with the book Hacktivist, number one, they should be. That's first and foremost. But Colin...
Oh, thanks.
Well, Colin and Jackson are co-writers on it, and Marcus is the artist on here. Can you kind of tell us a little bit about how this book all got started? I mean, it was created by Alyssa Milano, who, you know, most people are familiar with her from her TV and movie fame.
Yeah, which was entirely our familiarity with her as well when we first got the call. Colin and I have worked together as screenwriting partners for about 7 years, 5 years, I'd say, professionally, and we've been kind of around the block in Hollywood. We live out here in L.A. That's where you're hearing us from.
Okay.
We've been around the block a bunch of times, just doing development with people with all kinds of backgrounds. So sometimes that's entertainment, sometimes that's producers, sometimes that's actors. You know, you get various kinds of people in the room. And we got a call from Rebecca Taylor, who's the editor over at Archaea, who we were closest with at the time, and still, I mean, she's our favoriteest person ever. She's incredible. And I've been friends with her since way back. She found an old book I wrote called Freak Show with a guy named David Server, who's sort of the third in Colin and I's little triumvirate. And she called us up and she said, hey, you know, would you have any interest in pitching what they call a celebrity book? We were like, well, you know, yeah, but there's lots of expectations that come along with quote-unquote celebrity books in terms of, like, who's writing it and how is it getting put together and what's the creative process like and how much are we going to have room to actually create. And she said, well, it's with Alyssa Milano. And we were like, okay, well, can we meet her? Because that's awesome. And it turned out that, her next sentence was, yeah, but it's about hacking. And that got us started on a long conversation about how you make that into a comic book, how you take hacking, which is an inherently non-visual concept, and turn it into something very visual.
Yeah.
So the honest truth is, they said the words Alyssa Milano and hacking to us, and Colin and I did what we do, which is get together and just start talking.
Yeah, we basically started really just kind of brainstorming on what kind of characters would live in this world and how we could tell this story as honestly as possible. Because one of the things Rebecca really... nailed for us was that Alyssa didn't want to do a book about, you know, it's not like these guys are, they're putting on tights or superpowers and flying through the internet. She wanted a grounded, real take on this subject. And we knew her pitch had kind of been, what if Jack Dorsey was anonymous?
Jack Dorsey being the founder of Twitter and also, incidentally, the godfather of Alyssa's first child, right?
Oh, I didn't know about the second part. Yeah.
Yeah, she and Jack are very close, and Milo, her first son, is... apparently really looked after by Jack, and he's a pretty awesome sort of influence to all of them.
So we drove out to near Alyssa's neck of the woods. We sat down, and immediately the energy at this table, you know, sometimes you sit down with celebrities and you really get they're very not self-centered, but they're really in their own heads.
Yeah.
The thing we immediately realized about Alyssa was that she was so inclusive. We started to just talk with her as a person, and she responded just as a friend almost. Pretty soon, this kind of lunch became this two-hour-long jam session where we were talking about everything from world politics to the Arab Spring to the actual practicalities of hacking, and we realized that she also really knew her stuff. By the end of this thing, we were really on board, we were really excited, but we weren't quite sure how it was going to progress, and the next day, Jack and I both get these all black leather folios on our doorstep, like delivered by Shadow. We have no idea how they showed up. Here. And we open it up, and inside there's about 300 pages of photocopied, just every article from every periodical of the last 5 years about the entire birth of this movement and everything that you could possibly need. And we were like, okay, we're in.
And there's a little note alongside that's still on my wall that's on Alyssa's sort of personal stationery, and it says world peace on top, and then in it, it just written down is, Jackson, enjoy! Yeah, Alyssa, we'll enjoy.
Yeah, he calls me, he's like, you got that? I'm like, yeah, I got that. He's like, I guess we got the gig.
All right, so obviously Alyssa did a lot of research as far as hackers go. What about you guys? How much hacker knowledge do you guys know before writing this?
The honest truth is very little, at least when we started. I was raised by programmers. My mother is one of, like, the first female computer programmers, like, out there. She started when the medium was young, at least in sort of the modern age. And my father did a lot of it as well. He worked in, you know, consumer electronics until he retired this year. So I spent a lot of time around people for whom this was another language, a second language. But for me, that was never the case. I'm a writer. That's where I come from. I know enough about computers to get by. I'm a decent, you know, brain, but that's not our expertise any more than I would say, being a zombie is the expertise of somebody like George Romero. Like, you have to, as a writer, one of the things you do is look at the medium and look at the story you want to tell and look at the world you're trying to tell it in and try and find the way to access it from your direction. And Colin and I always access a place from character first. That's like our motto. That's why people come to us. It's why we've had any success so far, is that we like to take the basic genre concept, strip out all the genre concepts, strip out, if it's a space thing, take out everything that's about space and see, could you still tell this story in a one room with two characters doing their thing? Basically, can you bend us this? And if you can, then okay, maybe we've got a story here. Yeah. So for us, before we got into any of the research, and eventually we did, and we can go into how that worked, we sat down and tried to figure out, is there a character story here that really gets us going, that really gets us excited, and that tells us something we haven't seen in the medium before, regardless of whether or not it's about hackers.
Yeah. Now, Marcus, how did you get pulled into the project?
I only knew Stephen Christie, which is the creative director at Arkea now, but at for a time before Hacktivist, he was my editor for Cyborg 009, which was as well with Arkea. And after we finished that project, we've been talking for a few months about a possibility of doing something else, and he brought it up to me, this idea of working with Alyssa Milano. He didn't even say Hacktivist, he just said Alyssa Milano. I said, well, I guess I have to hear you out, right? So I had a talk with, Steven and Rebecca, and they said, this is the subject matter, this is what they were looking for, and they apparently like my work on Cyborg, so I just said, it'll be something different. I've never drawn anything like this before. Very character-driven a story, and I'm more known for, superheroes and tights, so this is a way to, stretch my legs into something that I am not typically used to doing.
Well,
so I had to jump on right away.
For somebody who is, at least by your own definition, this isn't your normal thing, I've got to say the art in this book is fantastic. I mean, everything from the perspectives to the panel layouts to the actual emotions coming from the characters, it feeds so well into the written word. I mean, that's one of the reasons we're so excited about this book, is because it does have the full package on there. And a lot of times you find books where the writing's great and the art is okay, or if it wasn't for the art, the story would just be left behind. These two blend together so perfectly well, and it's why I think this book really reached out to us in a way that very easily couldn't have, because this is a tough subject matter.
Yeah, it's funny. That was really our big worry coming into the book when we started it. Once we figured out, okay, we could tell a story about two friends going through a sort of crisis of friendship and a crisis of faith, and really trying to understand, where these two characters, Ed and Nate, who are the core of our book, these two actors who end up essentially using their quote unquote powers, their ability, their infrastructure to to change the world in the ways that they see fit, start to realize the actual ramifications of that. We're like, okay, that's a great story. We can really get into that. We're excited. But we better have a damn good way to tell the story visually because we're in comics. If we're going to tell this whole story in terms of like server rooms and backdoor deals and, you know, laptops, that's going to get real boring.
Yeah. Now, one thing I realized for listeners that maybe aren't familiar with the book and the subject matter, we should probably give them like the little 30-second elevator pitch here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they have an idea. So, you know, whoever wants to grab that one, go for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Our story is essentially about the cross section between the Arab Spring and this new age of digital revolution. Our story centers around two best friends who started up we call it a Facebook killer, a social network so powerful that everyone's using it called Your Life. But at night, when they shut off the lights, they're together the hacker collective known as Save Yourself, where they use their abilities and they use their algorithms and their exploits to really strike a blow against tyranny wherever they might find it. And as our story opens, that tyranny is in Tunisia, where the people are being oppressed by their own elected government that is turned against them.
And so what we do is we follow these two as they make their first incursion into Tunisia and end up doing using an asset on the ground known as Serene, who will come to be very important in the coming issues of the book. We're up to issue 2 now, but issue 3, which drops, well, as far as we're recording this Wednesday, is going to you'll see a big sort of step forward in terms of Serene's role and Tunisia's role in our story. The U.S. government comes in line, finds them, realizes what they're doing, and tries to put them under their thumb. And that's really where the whole drama starts to come from, as these two men start to get pulled apart by the forces that are playing on them.
And I will say that the role of the government in issue 2 was pretty unexpected for me when I read it. I mean, I didn't expect them to quite be coming down quite as hard, quite as fast, or if at all. And I was like, whoa, you know, and it's nice to have a little bit something that you don't see coming but makes perfect sense in the story.
You know, that was that leads to a really interesting thing because we went through that a few times in the over the course of writing this book. We started writing Hacktivist about a year ago, a little over a year ago, maybe a year and a half almost.
Yeah.
Quite a while ago when we started outlining, because this required a lot of work that was done before we ever got to scripting. The first step was a lot of research. Learning a lot about Tunisia once we decided that Tunisia was where we were going to set our sections that didn't take place in San Francisco. Then learning a lot about how Anonymous operates and how our system was going to operate very differently than that, which has been a point of contention with some of the people from Anonymous who've read the book now, who are like, oh, well, this isn't how Anonymous works. They're right. It's not. We're doing a different thing. And we hope to be able to tell a little bit more of that and, you know, if we get to do another story like this. The fun with this was that as we went, stuff started happening in the real world that mirrored the story that we were writing. When we started this book, we didn't know who Edward Snowden was. Nobody did. And then halfway through the process of writing the story, like we're in script on writing a book about a hacker named Ed when Edward Snowden does pretty much exactly what Ed does.
What I'm loving most about this interview is you guys are just answering half the questions that we haven't even got to ask yet. Like,
We've been thinking on this one for a while.
Sorry, guys.
Oh, no, that's fine. You're making our job easy. That just means we can drink our beer faster.
Yeah, there you go. You can some comics.
Yeah.
It was really bizarre because we're sitting there being like, all right, well, this is definitely getting to a point where, you know, we have to be cognizant of the fact that we might think we're writing science fiction, but we're not.
Well, and as we're developing, I mean, the situation in Tunisia itself is massively flexible and really was evolving. As we were trying to pin down our story, the situation on the ground there was changing rapidly. When we hypothesized that the American government would really treat, you know, how they would react to a traitor like this, you know, how they would react to someone turning against them in this kind of digital capacity, we were just guesstimating. And then we turn around and turn on the news and realize, you know, they're bringing down the hammer on Edward Snowden. Like, they're bringing down the hammer on all these guys, which when we wrote it was just...
Well, and it was interesting because initially we were kind of running from some of these specifics. If there's anybody listening who's familiar with the sort of hacktivist community or with information security, they'll know names like Barrett Brown and Jeremy Hammond. The first iterations of Ed were named Jeremy, and we changed his name specifically because we didn't want to make anybody think we were trying to appropriate Jeremy Hammond's story. We have the utmost respect for these guys who have spent, I mean, who are now spending jail time for trying to elucidate and bring to light the secrets that are kept from the American public. There is something heroic. Of course, there's also something illegal about it, but there's something very heroic about it, and we didn't want to feel like we were over-appropriating those stories. And then here we name our character Ed, and Edward Snowden happens, and we're like, okay, we can't keep running from this. At some point or another, we have to just accept the fact that we're writing about something that's very true and very real and try and treat it with the utmost respect, which is sort of where we're at. And we found that there have been people in the hacker community since and before the book. We had a fact checker. But we had we've had people since interface with us and say, look, you know, this is how I feel about what you're doing. You know, maybe you should look at trying to do this in the story. Maybe you should think about how this exploit would work. We've actually had a little bit of interface with the community that hasn't been so much angry that we're coming in and trying to tell their story for them, but has been understanding of the fact that we're trying to tell our own story and they want to help us up our veracity, which has been kind of awesome for us.
That's incredible, yeah.
Now, I've also heard rumors that Serene was also modeled after Alyssa. Is that true?
No. No. weirdly enough, if we made Agent Bryn Ori, our government agent, very specifically with Alyssa in mind. So if we ever got to do a movie, we'd be like, oh, absolutely her. Serene is an amalgamation, really, of a lot of our feelings and thoughts about how the Arab Spring is changing the way that social discourse happens around the world, not just in the countries where it's happening, but in all the countries that share their beliefs and their sort of history. She's a strong female character who lives in a pretty patriarchal society. She's somebody who, over the course of our book, and it's hard to say this without some spoilers, but she's someone who, over the course of our book, is going to be very pivotal in changing her own country and in changing the life of our protagonist.
But to speak to Bryn for a second, it's actually in the script itself, Bryn's first appearance. It's this Marcus just rocked it. It's this amazing pinup shot. She looks so gorgeous. And in the script, we wrote, you know, she appears, she stands looking at Nate. This is a Mary Jane Watson moment. He just struck the jackpot. Right? Like, that's in our script. Which then Ian Herring, our, you know, Marcus' partner on most projects and a absolute juggernaut in his own right, because we said Mary Jane, he colored Bryn with this luscious red hair.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, wow, we really didn't plan on that, but that's so beautiful and awesome. And she just, it cuts to the quick of the character, so strong. She's so provocative. They were like, yep, that's her hair now. So,
yeah, me and Ian talked about it actually with the design. When I did Bryn and Serene's look, you know, obviously I had a, you know, a lot of conversations with Ian about what we wanted to do with her, and you know, yeah, the reddish strawberry blonde type hair were a decision me and Ian both made with the type of face we wanted. We wanted sharper features as opposed to sharp, harsh features with clothes, you know, really stern clothes, serious clothes, and Serene was more round, like even her hair is rounder, kind of like look, softer features. Clothes that are a little bit more earthy. We really picked those looks specifically, actually, for a subconscious idea of representation of an ideal more than actual people.
Can I want to jump in because this is just a funny thing that just happened the other day and really blew my mind. So you might have heard that there's been a whole situation in Turkey with the banning of Twitter. Mm-hmm. This is something that happened over the course of the last week. Essentially, the Turkish government, fearing for the spread of concepts of corruption at the top, have banned Twitter as a way for their people to talk to each other, essentially. This is kind of a silly concept because there's lots of ways to get around a governmental internet ban, and now you have people in Tunisia, I'm sorry, in Turkey, who are actually graffitiing IP addresses up on for non-Turkish DNS servers up on like government billboards and things like that, so that people can get out to Twitter. One of the hacker organizations that have been sort of, you know, anonymous-esque hacker organizations that have been working on the ground in Turkey, they're known as Red Hack. And I follow a lot of these guys on Twitter because I try and just sort of keep up with this stuff as close to the ground as I can. And one of the primary sources this week for my information on this, though it's all in Turkish, so I've had to run it through translators, is a Twitter account called Red Hack Serene, who's an awesome, badass female hacker on the ground in Turkey. And it's been blowing my mind. I sent an email.
Art imitates life, right?
Sent an email to Rebecca Taylor, and I was like, so this is a thing that's happening. And she was like, I'm starting to fear that you guys just write things and they come to life.
Yeah, are you guys going to explain where that plane from Malaysia is at?
$1 million.
What was that, guys?
I said, you know, she was like, can you write me a comic about me winning $1 million?
Well, Tony just wanted to know if you're going to write write something in the story to explain where that Malaysian airplane went.
I think David Lindelof is like, or Damon Lindelof's like way ahead of us on that.
We were actually having that conversation last night that as soon as we heard about it, it was like, we're sitting there going, are we the only ones that were thinking Oceanic Flight 815?
No, you're not. And yeah. Also, I just a couple nights ago started Matt Kinn's Mind Management.
Oh yeah,
which I'm loving. Incidentally, like all the shout outs to Matt Kinn. That book is wild. And another Flight 15, another airplane with weird supernatural stuff going on. I was like, man, like I can't get away from crazy airplanes this week.
Well, yeah. Speaking of like, you know, that, like, what other books are you guys reading right now? I mean, that was one of our questions that you started answering without us asking.
We're huge fans of Saga.
Oh, God, yes.
Which I suppose everybody is, but yeah. Colin and I especially are like kind of mega space opera fans. So for us, that's been a big one recently. I just finished the first. I'm going straight through IDW's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles relaunch.
Oh, that's
I'm way
awesome.
way behind on it. So I just started Eastman Waltz's first couple trades there, and I'm loving it. Really cool, weird, new way of taking on the characters.
I just started this book series. It's a little vague. You might not have heard of it. I think it came out a little while ago. It's called Ultimate Spider-Man. I'd never heard of this book.
Not familiar. Yeah.
A friend heard that I hadn't read it yet, and he has the entire collection. And he practically popped me in the nose and sent me home with the entire stack. I was like, all right, I have my homework to do.
Well,
it's a pretty good book.
After years of yelling at this guy to read this book, you got to understand, Colin and I met initially because, you know, we were mutual friends in college, and we used to go to the comic book store together. That was how we met. Only one of our friends had a car, our friend David Server, who I wrote Freak Show with, right? He had a car, and we would all pile into his car, and we would drive out to the comic book store, and we would buy comic books.
And then we would eat pizza.
And eat pizza. Yeah, it was great. That was like our tradition. And, I mean, we must have talked about Ultimate Spider-Man constantly.
Yes,
it was like our favorite book.
I know.
Marcus, what are you reading? Or are you just drawing, like,
not Aren't we
stuff?
Supposed to ask the question?
Well,
you guys take it from here.
A lot of people don't seem to realize this, but since September, I've been working on New Warriors and Hacktivist pencil and inking, so literally I have no time for anything, and I haven't had the chance to really sit down and think, let alone do anything other than work. But my girlfriend, for my birthday, finally bought me Akira, at least the first volume of the English translation, so I'm going backwards. I'm reading some classics to kind of get my interest into the, you know, something that is, at least I can sit down and, you know, enjoy as a standalone right now.
Well, what I gotta add in here, too, is that another example of art imitating your lives, especially Jackson Collin. I've been bugging Tony forever to read Saga, and he literally just picked up the trades this last Wednesday.
Awesome.
So, yeah,
hey, dude, you'll enjoy it. It's a hell of a thing.
I've already started reading the first one, and it sucked me in.
Yeah,
he does a damn good job. And Fiona Staples, my God.
Well, and it's funny. If comic books are that's our vigilante persona, Jack and I. During the day, our normal alter egos write features, features in TV. But by and large, what we write is stuff like Saga. Like, we are all about big ideas told massively across epic scales. You know, we're action-adventure, like, junkies. And then we come to comics, ironically, then we come to comics to tell small personal stories based in the here and now.
For now, yeah. For now. Wait for what we'll do next. I should mention, I was like, there's something I'm missing in terms of recommending and talking up other guys. I read Warren Ellis and Declan Shelby's take on Moon Knight this week.
Yeah.
And I couldn't be more in love with what they're doing. I'm a huge fan of Declan. He's just awesome. And Warren Ellis practically taught me how to write, right? Just like learning from reading Transnet and Planetary and Authority was the first book I picked up when I got back into comics as a teenager. Watching what they do with, and I like the Charlie Houston run on Moon Knight a lot, but I got kind of lost in how really abstract it got at some points. And I really loved Bendis's like kind of bonkers hyper Avengers take on it. So seeing what Warren Ellis does to contextualize both of those things is awesome. And Declan Shalvey's like weird crow-faced Khonshu is blowing my mind. I really dig it.
Now, I've got a question, and Marcus, since you're here, this is great, because this one's primarily aimed at you, but then it's also going to be aimed at both Jackson and Colin, too. But Marcus, I want to start with you. How many Easter eggs do you draw into your books, if you do at all?
I used to throw in a few things here and there. I actually don't very often. You know who does, though? Ian Herring does. And he'll color in something or someone or have a lot of. If there's like a painting on the wall, it's usually one of his own. Like he's a great graphic artist himself. Like he went to school for illustration, so he always throws like a billboard up and it's his illustrations or something like that.
See, now you actually like Tony and I both just instantly grabbed the books and started flipping through. Going, all right, damn it, there's got to be one in here.
Awesome.
Do you guys, now, Jackson and Colin, do you guys write anything Easter egg-ish in there, you know?
Yeah, you caught us. we're not obviously, you know, we can only write what Marcus can draw, you know. And
willing to draw.
And willing. You know, there's no point in us to be, you know, our characters shouldn't be speaking in wink, wink, nudge, nudge Easter eggs. So if we do anything, it's always going to be visual. But if you squint, if you keep your eyes open in the big party scene in issue one, you might feature there's a few celebrity cameos that Mr. Toe was able to slip in there.
Yeah, I'm from Boston. We have a pretty unsubtle Tom Brady cameo. We've got a. There's a guy who might be Jay-Z or might be Marcus. I can't tell. the fun thing with this book actually was we got to play with Your Life handles for
yeah.
the character, right? Mm. So if you look at the Twitter feeds, you'll find there's throughout the book there's a glut of Star Trek references because we're giant Trek nerds.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of there's an Enterprise reference and a Voyager reference in there. My buddy Nick Bragg, who's a really good like animation writer out here, he has a Twitter account called Braggart at Best. Braggart at Best is the guy who's bitching about the Your Life servers in issue two.
But and those were all kind of fun winks. But one of our characters' name is Sia. And Sia is actually an Easter egg, in a sense, to our good friend Sia Abderzai, who is a founder of the art collective Black Iron Kisses. Okay. But Sia was a friend who was living with us when Iran first started to go through its green revolution. And he, and the fact that, you know, Sia
He's Iranian-born.
Yeah, he's Iranian-born, so he humanized that conflict for us in a way that we'd never really realized, never really thought about it, and seeing how it affected him really opened our eyes to the entire the entire situation. So
yeah, it's funny when you talk about research for the book. Sia was our first bit of research, and we were doing it well before we knew we were doing the book. We would just talk for hours and ask him questions and try and understand his perspective because it is so fundamentally different than our own. And it really helped open our eyes to just to the concept of kind of the global community as opposed to the individual or national community, and how limiting those concepts can be sometimes. He's a huge influence on the book. So yeah, we made sure to name a character after.
Less of an Easter egg and more of a shout out, I suppose.
Okay. Yeah.
Now we know it's a 4-issue miniseries, but do you guys see that this could go past that and go into a regular series?
We certainly would love to. A lot of that, there's a lot of questions and concerns that come up as soon as you start talking about regular series, not the least of which is that we wouldn't necessarily, like, as you say, the synergy of the book really comes from, you know, obviously we and Alyssa really get on and understand it, but this is a book that is defined in a lot of ways by Marcus and Ian, and we, as a team, really want to make sure that if we do more that it is the same team, or at the very least that it feels, you know, like the same book.
Yeah.
We have other stories we'd like to tell. In fact, we have a very good starting point for what Hacktivist 2 looks like, but we don't want to rush anybody into it, and ultimately, that's Alyssa's call.
Now, how involved is she in the, you know, I mean, like, because obviously she came up with the concept. Is she involved in, like, in the whole process while you guys are sitting down scripting stuff out? Do you go back and forth with her, or did she come up with the idea and say, here's where it's going, you guys finish it off from here?
No, she is the best kind of, in features, she would be the producer. She has the kernel of the concept, and she only wants to help us tell the best story possible. But what she does is, you know, she's reading every draft of the script. She's weighing in. She's looking at every page of artwork and weighing in. She's, we wrote a couple things in a very specific way, and we kind of heard back, like, guys, that's not what these characters would wear. And we kind of like, really, that's fascinating. And she sent us this document. You know, she created a lookbook for how these characters, what they look like. And I know, Marcus, that influenced how these guys look themselves. You know, so she really is involved. She has her fingers in every step of the process and is very vocal about what she thinks works and what she thinks doesn't work. And in a lot of ways, that's fantastic because she doesn't come from the comic book world. She has a layman's perspective, but the great thing is she has impeccable taste.
That was the interesting thing about working with her, I think. She'll take our ideas and make them better in the same way that we try and take her ideas and make them better. The way I heard her put it recently is, like, it's a full collaboration. And it really is. The story here really comes from our love and obsession with the way that global revolution is changing in a digital age. But that doesn't change the fact that the root of this thing is, what if Jack Dorsey was anonymous? And that we're always going back to that core, and we're always going back to that character. So we came in, I think, with a lot of concepts about globalism that obviously really rang true to Alyssa because she is a UNICEF ambassador and is very involved in all that. We ended up coming to her with concepts. She ended up coming to us with concepts. It really is a thing that came together. While we wrote the book and you know, wrote the pages, she very much did create the world, and has been very involved in fleshing it out with us. And I think, as Colin said, yeah, the most accurate portrayal is that of, like, a very good producer.
You know, and I think that's the one thing that really intrigued, at least me personally, to this book was that, you know, you look here and you're like, okay, you know, you've got Alyssa as the creator, you've got, you know, co-writers, then you've got, you know, an artist and a colorist on there, and I'm like, this is a unique creative process on here. And that was one of the things that I was most interested in and wanted to talk to you guys about. And thank you so much for actually kind of breaking that down, because, you know, we're familiar with the standard one writer, one artist, you know, maybe penciler, inker, colorist, but whatever. But yeah, to see this kind of whole creative process where it actually, you can tell reading it that this is a team effort where everybody is truly working together. It comes across, you know, on the page. And I think that's what separates Hacktivist from so many other books that are out there right now.
Wow, thanks.
Thank you very much.
You know, it's funny. I'd actually love to talk about that for a second, just because I think it's just an interesting discussion topic. Writing teams are rare in comics. It's not that they don't exist, but certainly you see less of them than you do single writers. Mm-hmm. I imagine a big portion of that, I think a big portion of that is that it comes down to having that core vision, right? Like I was talking about mind management earlier. I love reading Matt Kent because Matt Kent is the artist and the writer, and you're getting the whole thing out of him, right? You read that book and that's just Matt Kent unplugged, which I love. That's not how Colin and I work. We have a, you know, neither of us, I mean, Colin's an artist. I'm not. But the two of us, when we put together a project, we do it by throwing our sort of unadulterated, unfiltered ideas at each other. And it's like a boxing match. We just, you know, throw the ideas at each other and make them fight. And we fight and we yell and we talk and we pace. And eventually we have something that both of us go like, oh, yeah, actually, that doesn't suck. And as soon as we have that, we have a place. No, and we understand that that's not necessarily a creative process that brings, like, a voice, quote-unquote, in the way that somebody, you know, can, like, a one writer can come in and be like, you know a Warren Ellis book because you read Warren's voice in it. Mm-hmm. Colin and I have a joint voice that's different than our individual voices. And while we have projects that happen individually, and you'll probably see those down the line, when we work together, we think we get better work.
Yeah,
because of that team process.
It's really a matter of the two of us write much better together than we do apart. But in that same way, Jack and I write a lot of scripts that we fire off into the universe, and they might go to someone's office or someone might attach, but they don't happen on the screen. The fact that we write these words and then send them to Marcus, and then Marcus and Ian team up and they return these breathtaking pages. Like, I cannot speak highly enough to the utter thrill it is for us to take our words that are on the page and to get back such phenomenal content. Like, yes, Jack and I are telling a story, but that story could not exist if it wasn't for Marcus's ability to not just draft beautiful architecture and fantastic momentum, but to capture these expressions, the humanity on these characters, and their emotions. While Ian just brings this entire world to life and gets so expressionistic with the coloring and the pacing and the environment. When we say it's a collaborative effort, it truly is all of us coming together to create this work of love. And though Alyssa is the brainchild, we really do have to give props to the team captain, Rebecca Taylor, who really is just an utter beast and holds this entire thing together.
Yeah, she's brilliant. And she'll work in ways that are incredibly subtle. You know, you'll get like a couple of emails, a couple of notes, and a little tweaks and little changes. And other times, I mean, you know, Marcus, you were saying, you know, they came to you and they were like, oh, it's a book with Alyssa Milano, and you even approaches you. The way that we heard about Marcus was that Tay came over to my house. I have these Game of Thrones parties at my place, and we get a bunch of people and we see Game of Thrones. And Tay comes over to one of them, and she comes with her phone, and she's like, so, hey, I've got an artist that you should look at for Activist. And she's like, I don't know if you'll like him. It's very like anime. I don't know. But we love him and we think he'd be perfect. And she was like really nervous. And I was like, okay, who? She was like, Marcus Cho. And I was like, shut up. Yeah. Shut up. She showed me like a couple, like, I hadn't seen any of Cyborg at that point. And she showed me Cyborg and I was like, a million times yes, and she seemed so giddy. And I was like, you didn't need to come all this way you could have texted me the name Marcus Toe, and it would have been enough.
Yeah, you had us.
She's awesome. She hustles harder than anybody I've seen, and it really, the only reason this book is out there is that she really took it every finish line.
All right, well, do you guys have any other upcoming projects or anything else you guys are working on right now that might let our listeners know?
Talk about New Warriors.
Do it.
Well, I don't know if there's really anything to talk about with New Warriors. I mean,
yeah, it's just a little book from another little publisher called Marvel. You probably haven't heard of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, honestly, it's okay. Well, New Warriors. It's out and it's going to be. I think the third issue is supposed to come out in a couple weeks as well, but. Me and Chris Yost reuniting after Red Robin, him and I feel like work really well together, and it's been a while. We've been trying to find something to work on together, and finally Marvel broke down and finally gave me a job, and And yeah, it's been great ever since. Though the deadlines are killer, so it's pretty bad.
Well, you know, and I had the pleasure of meeting Chris here. Oh, I don't know, about maybe 8 months ago ish or so. And it, dude, you, nicest guy in the world. I mean, if you're gonna get partnered totally. With somebody, boy, that's gotta be a great one too. Because he's fantastic.
Well, I lucked out when I got on Red Robin with him because I mean, Red Robin was my first job in mainstream comics, really, other than Aspen Comics, and it just kind of fit right away. So I was spoiled on my first project, and we've been friends ever since.
Yeah, we don't know anything about that.
Yeah, we're not.
we do our first comic, and we get like Marcus and the guy that colored Tail of Sand. I swear, like when they told me you worked with Ian, I flipped it.
Shit. I bet you Ian's going to get nominated for another Eisner with Miss Marvel, though. He's working on that, and that's looking so good.
Talk about a book. You asked earlier, what books are we reading? Miss Marvel.
Yeah, Miss Marvel was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah,
just really incredible work, and just G. Will is insane. It's awesome.
Well, and Kelly Sue DeConnick is fabulous in with that series. And, I mean, she has been since the whole reboot of Captain Marvel. So, yeah, I've loved it.
Well, no. I mean, I think that's the cool thing is that now you have a Captain Marvel series coming from Kelly Sue that has one very, you know, I mean, DeConnick's voice is one thing, and it really comes through. She's got a voice and she's got a take on Captain Marvel, and it's incredible. Like, her Carol Danvers is wonderful. And then at the same time, you with this new Miss Marvel concept, getting to take it in its own direction, and obviously as two guys that have been spent a lot of time trying to write a book that takes place in Tunisia, and we're not Muslim, and we're trying to really draw from as much research and personal love as we can to tell that story with honesty. I think it's great that Miss Marvel is coming to it from a place of total veracity.
And with such, like, you could easily have a book like that with, you know, like a secondary artist, you know, whatever, just someone put it on just so they can have it, but they know they pick, you know, Sana, who's an editor who's Middle Eastern, she knows, you know, her thing. The writer as well is Muslim, and you have an A-plus artist, Adrian Alfona, drawing it. I mean, that is a top book with top talent on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and it's gotten a lot of great, not only press before it came out, but it's gotten a really good reception as well.
It's a great book.
Yeah.
It reads like reading Peter Parker for the first time. Yeah. You're sitting there being like, I love this character. I can't wait to see this character be a superhero. And that, like, if there was one thing that is, you know, as I said, like what Colin and I come back to over and over again is lead with character. And it's great when you get to see these books that really do that and do it well.
Now, before we finish up here with you guys, do you guys have any upcoming appearances where people might be able to, like, you know, come up, shake your hand, poke you with a stick, buy you a beer, anything like that?
Well, I'm going to be at Emerald City Comic Con this weekend.
We really wanted to be, but it looks like we're probably not.
Yeah.
It's just for time and money's sake. But we will be certainly at San Diego this year. Hopefully, we'll also be at WonderCon this year.
Yeah, we'll be at WonderCon, though, just wandering around, high-fiving people.
And we'd like to make it out to C2E2. So there's still a possibility that we'll be at C2E2. It's one of my favorite shows. I spent some time in Chicago as a kid, so hopefully that's a thing we can make.
Well, you guys need to let us know if you are, because Tony and I will be there as press. So
great. We will.
Yeah. Now, how can people find you online if they want to, check out your stuff online or reach out to you and give you a virtual high five there?
Easy peasy. We are both on Twitter. I'm at Jackson Lansing. That's LANZING.
I'm at CP Kelly. Not at Colin Kelly. At Colin Kelly. Very upset.
Yeah. I saw those tweets.
Marcus, what about
you? I'm at Marcus Toe. Just one word, at Marcus T-O. And also on Tumblr at MarcusToe.tumblr.com or something like that.
Website, you look us up, the ColinKelly.com and JacksonLansing.com. You can find more about our previous work and what upcoming work that we have that we cannot yet talk about. But it's going to be a fun time to sort of get on board with what we're doing, because finally, you know, as Colin pointed out, most of what we've done is cloak and dagger in Hollywood, and you never see it unless it gets made, and that's a Herculean effort, right? finally, now that we're in comics and we can share our ideas with the public, we're thrilled. We can't wait, and we want to do a lot more work in the medium. This has been an experience for us.
And as soon as you guys are able to talk about your next project, just let us know, because you know we want to hear about it.
We will.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
All right, guys. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up here for us.
Yep. You guys answered a lot more questions than we asked, so thank you.
The funny thing is, we actually, we had a list of things that we wanted to make sure that we talked to you about, and we're just sitting here checking stuff off without even asking it. It was fantastic. So thank you guys so much. It truly was a pleasure talking to you. We absolutely love the book. Cannot wait to see issue 3 and 4, and then hopefully a volume 2 maybe down the road. So.
Thanks a lot.
We're also really looking forward to the hardcover, because Archaea does really great graphic novels.
Oh, God.
And I'm sure they're going to bound it up really nicely with, other nice, cool sketches and other things like that, and how the book was made. So,
well, and we didn't even talk about the covers, on the regular, issues, where it's part glossy, part matte that draws the picture in. And, I mean, that's one of the things I love about Archaea. They put out some of the highest quality products you've ever seen in the comic book industry. It's insane.
Because they hire a graphic designer. Who'd have thought that's all you need, right?
it really
works. I mean, most comics, they don't have a graphic designer. They just have a design team, but they're just usually interns or people that, just randomly get that job.
Yeah, well, it's... The book is fantastic, guys. Thank you again, and we'll be chatting here with you soon.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Thanks. Bye.